Welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great stuff that you're doing for the community, that's for sure. Today, we've got Kevin Hickerson. He's with the Fairfax Education Association. He's president of the union. Kevin, welcome back.
Hey, Charles. How you doing today?
Man, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. So, what is going on in Fairfax County?
We got some interesting developments. First, we have a new superintendent that has been finalized, or not finalized yet, but he's a finalist. He's a former teacher principal in Fairfax County. He's currently the superintendent in Lynchburg, which is in Virginia. And you know, it's one of those interesting things that, as a president, you don't often get to see a new incoming superintendent come in and you know, take on the role. So it'll be interesting to see what our organization can do to work with him.
And you know, Kevin, you've been around there for a while. Have you worked with him before?
No, you know, he was a little bit before my time in terms of, you know, being in. He was actually in the association at one point, but he was a little bit before me. I know that he had a principalship at one of the high schools, but I didn't know him personally. But you know, it's one of those things where I look forward to getting with him and talking to him about the issues that we have here in Fairfax County.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are always very important. It's nice to have somebody coming in that has an idea of what's going on and probably has some ideas on how to fix it.
Well, I believe we're, you know, moving in a pretty good direction right now in terms of our county. I mean, our county has a lot of, you know, issues as well. But I think that there's, you know, a semblance that, you know, if you're talking about like thawing something out, we're definitely thawing something out here. And I think we as long as we have the funding necessary to be able to keep good teachers and good, you know, ESPs in the county, I think that, you know, we can move forward on some of the issues that we're having with in terms of class size and other areas.
Absolutely. Now, Fairfax County, it's a fairly well-to-do county. Your families in Fairfax have decided that they want to help nurture the schools, and that's a good thing. You're getting a lot of support in other directions from the county. Is that going to be kind of a force magnifier for the new superintendent coming in?
I definitely think that he's going to have to find a way to work with the County Board of Supervisors. In Virginia, the school board does not have any funding authority, so the superintendent and the school board have to do a deft job of being able to work with the Board of Supervisors, who are the ones that give the transfer to the schools to be able to do what is necessary to educate its citizens. This person is definitely going to have to reach out and, you know, make sure that the appropriate level of funding is given to it, not just for, you know, the basics, but we have a great school system, Charles. We have what a lot of people refer to as like a shining star school system. But, you know, over the years, I think we've been resting on our laurels a little bit in terms of what it takes to actually fund the school system. And it's just not for the teachers. It's for the whole system. We got to talk about the students. And that's what it's really all about, ultimately, Charles, is the students. The students are what, you know, drive us as educators to, one, get into the profession, but also, two, to put the time, effort, and commitment in to make sure that, you know, they're getting the best education possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And funding goes hand in hand with parental engagement, community engagement, and leadership. So it sounds like you guys are continuing to put it together in the right way and you're moving forward.
Oh, yeah, that, certainly. You know, the great thing, Charles, is that just recently we had the budget was voted on last week. And, you know, while there's good things in there, you know, about, you know, giving some raises to teachers and making sure that our support employees also get an additional salary bump, you know, we have some issues as well. Our class sizes went up by about a half a student. And, you know, that's not a good thing. But what, on the bright side of things, we actually had the school board put on a follow-on motion that addressed non financial side issues. We had heard from our members, we had heard from the general teaching and support employee population that they are overwhelmed at work. And one of the biggest words that came up in a survey was overwhelmed. And it comes from a lot of times some top-down administration that is a particular problem. We've had different issues like bullying in the classroom. We've had top-down, principal-driven work groups that don't necessarily work out best for the teachers in the classroom. We've had, basically they're the learning communities. We've also had other issues as well, such as the school schedules. Just making sure that the school schedules are working well, not only for the teachers, but for the students. And so our organization was actually the one to bring this up at a school board meeting, and they pretty much used the same language in the speech to be able to make this follow-on motion. The employees know how to best fix this, and that's what it's going to take, Charles, to make sure that our school system is the best for our students.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, Kevin, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk to you about those workload reductions and some of the other things that are going on.
Okay, great. Sounds good, Charles.
Fantastic. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
Leaving the Paris Climate Agreement would put America behind. That's the word from some energy market and job creation watchers. Media leaks from the White House say President Trump is leaning towards leaving the climate accord, but the administration has not confirmed this. Han Chen watches energy economics for the Natural Resources Defense Council. She says internationally and here in the U.S., the fastest job growth has been in clean energy. She says energy efficiency and renewables have added 3 million new jobs.
These are the fastest growing sectors. It's not in traditional fossil fuels. So if we want to grow the economy in West Virginia and in other states, we've seen that, clean energy jobs have been the strongest driver of that growth.
The coal industry and its political allies have argued that the climate agreement is part of what they describe as a war on coal. But Chen says 1,100 U.S. companies have publicly declared that they favored the Paris Accord. She says these companies include some of the largest, most profitable, and most forward-looking companies in the world.
The revenues for these companies are over $3 trillion. They support Paris because they know it'll be better for their risk from possible climate catastrophes. It's better for them in terms of jobs growth and so on.
Critics of the Paris Agreement have argued that if the U.S. shifts away from fossil fuels, developing nations such as India and China would more than make up the difference by burning more coal. Chen says that's no longer accurate. She says those two countries are shifting rapidly to renewables, and two of the world's largest economies are working hard to move workers out of the fossil fuel industries.
Germany and in China, what they're doing is offering transition for folks who are working in traditional fossil fuels. And in fact, China now leads the world in solar and wind.
Trump has tweeted that he will make a decision on the Paris Agreement this week. For the West Virginia News Service, I'm Dan Hyman.
You're listening to Win.
PGM, the union representing bakery workers. We have been joining forces with our members and thousands of community partners across America to end corporate exploitation of workers across the globe. Our campaign has its roots with the Mondelez Nabisco's firing of 600 workers at its Chicago bakery and replacing them with workers earning poverty wages in Mexico. College and university student activists have reached out to our global campaign, and the BCTGM is proud to welcome the more than 20 million students across America as partners in defeating this greed-based business model. Student voices have changed the world, and these future community and national leaders will add energy and heightened spirit to the BCTGM's consumer boycott of Mexican-made Nabisco products. Join the fight. Help change the world. Invite the Nabisco 600 team to your campus by visiting fightforamericanjobs.org. Follow us on Facebook at Nabisco 600 BCTGM Local 300.
The Sheet Metal Workers Local 12, reminding you that sheet metal is vital to technology and manufacturing in nearly every industry known to man. More information can be obtained online at smlocal12.org. That's smlocal12.org.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. We've got a lot of food in this country. We've got so much food that we can't eat it all. So how are 17 million kids in America struggling with hunger? That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and gets it to hungry kids who need it. Support Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Oh, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great stuff that you do for the community, that's for sure. This program is sponsored in part by the UFCW and the AFA-CWA, and we appreciate their support. Joining us today from the Fairfax Education Association, we've got Kevin Hickerson. Kevin, welcome back.
Thank you again, Charles.
Kevin, always a pleasure. We appreciate it. Workload reduction for teachers. I mean, it's a rough enough job as it is. And, you know, we were talking about your student level actually went up by a half a student. And barring any really bad jokes,
right.
Is that because you've got more students in the community, or is it because why did that happen?
No, it's all based on the budget this time, Charles. We started out with a close to $100 million gap. That's a deficit. Our school budget is $2.6 billion. And we had $100 million deficit, and slowly but surely, through a little bit of state funding here, an extra county transfer there, we worked it down to about around $40 million. But there was just really no place else to cut. We had talked earlier. They went after the retirement, so they made a little savings there, but they also cut a little bit into compensation that they wanted to give. They also increased fees to students and to parents. And so what you have now, you have to look at other places, and one of the biggest places is at your employees. And with a half student increase, they're going to reduce the teaching workforce by about 167 positions. So when you look at Fairfax County, that's about a teaching position per school. And so, you know, it's just going to increase the class sizes. A lot of people think, oh, it's just a half student, it's not going to increase it by much. But, you know, what a lot of people don't understand is that increases, your students in your AP classes, in your electives, a lot of times by about three or four students extra. And, Charles, I know you know this, but, you know, because you've heard it before, but, you know, when we go from 30 to 34 students, you know, you've increased the workload immensely.
Yeah, by about 11%. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, you know, and you also have three to four more personalities in the classroom to bounce off of 30 other students.
Right, right. So, yeah, I get it, and I think most people in the community get it. And, you know, we want to keep those classroom sizes down near 20, 22, 24 students, and that's not for the benefit of the teachers, although I'll stipulate, too, teachers enjoy that. But it's for the students, because the teacher has the ability to get to more students in a quicker time.
Sure. It's especially damning at the elementary school level. I mean, especially with, you know, those K through 4 students that, you know, where they're really, you know, just getting a firm grasp on things. You know, that's their formulation age where they're really going to shoot. It's really important to have your low class sizes then, because, you know, a lot of times a kid could get lost in the shuffle, you know what I'm saying, in terms of their education. When you have 30 students in a class, you know, the quiet one doesn't get necessarily called on. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where the teacher has to do extra work. The teachers love it because of the one-on-one attention they can give their students. And, you know, they like to form those bonds and relationships because, you know, just aside from the book learning, you know, the bond and relationship that a child and a teacher has is one of the most important things that can be developed in learning for a student.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, with lower student ratios, there's a whole bunch of great things that go on, and it benefits everybody. It benefits the students, it benefits the teachers, benefits the parents, it benefits the communities, it benefits employers down the road.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's a no-brainer. So when we're talking about reducing workload, I mean, it sounds like you guys have something up your sleeve that can help with overcoming the higher student ratios.
Well, yeah, I mean, so what we're going to be doing, I mean, in our organization, we have a committee that goes over various issues. You know, I visited my 72nd school today, and, you know, when I go out there, I'm listening to people, and I'm bringing these ideas back to our committee to be able to identify. We've got over two dozen issues that are identified, and we pare them down because you know if you try to bite down on 24 issues, it's gonna end up nipping you in the bud later on. So what we have to do is we have to pare down what we're doing to be able to make sure that we get, you know, our top 3 to 4 priorities. So we're gonna work on getting more info about the workload issues that have sprung up lately. And, you know, we're going to present our, not just the complaints, Charles, that's the big thing, is that, you know, we can present, you know, the issues, but then we have to have solutions to come around with it. And so, you know, the great thing about this follow-on motion that, you know, we helped push and our school board actually voted on and passed, you know, we're looking being solution-oriented so that it's not just a complaint organization, it's an organization that is active and getting things done.
And that's a very important thing. And my hat's off to you guys for trying to get those things done and working through the resources that you have. You know, it reflects well on you, the school, and the students, that's for sure.
It's important.
Yeah, and you know, but my question is you don't want to work in a defensive mode all the time. You want to be able to try and recoup some of those resources that are out there. So you can get back to where you were, maybe even a little bit better than before, right?
Well, exactly. And that's the thing, right? You know, membership and, you know, people like to see an active organization. They like to see that their dues money is being used in a proactive way. You know, if members and people that are non-members, you know, don't see us out there in the community, you know, that bodes badly for us because, you know, it's a vicious cycle. It's a downward spiral. So what we have to do is we have to be proactive, as you said, and not be on the defensive. It's okay to react to things, but it's better to be active and out there because when people see that action, people want to coalesce around it. They want to feel a part of it. So what we're hopefully going to be able to do is work with the new superintendent to make some positive changes. Yeah, but we need to make this impact real to our employees. It just can't be a superficial thing. It can't be like, here's something, you know, in the ether out there that is good for you. And if they don't feel the effect, if they don't feel those collaborative learning teams actually being led by teachers, if they don't feel that the classroom sizes are being reduced, or if they don't see that their school's planning time is not being taken and overrun by staff meetings, you know, they're going to look at us askew. So we have to make sure that it's a real thing and that it gets done and that it gets done right.
Yeah, there you go. Any other we got about 3 minutes left. Any other words for us today?
Well, you know, I think we have to, you know, talk about a little bit about our governor's race coming up. You know, we are excited that, you know, on June 13th, we're having a primary in Virginia. The old saying goes that every year is an election year.
Right.
And so last year, of course, we had the federal race. But we're, you know, this year, the Virginia Education Association endorsed Ralph Northam for governor. And, you know, he was a stalwart as a lieutenant governor in the state Senate when the votes were deadlocked. We had a pretty close split between Republicans and Democrats and pro-education friendly senators. And he was a person that would, you know, 100% of the time he had our backs, and he fought vouchers. He fought the private charter schools. He, you know, tried to increase the standards of quality in our school system. And, you know, we're doing our state level recommendation process right now for other seats that are in the House of Delegates. But our members are meeting and, you know, educating potential legislators. And that's a power of our union as well, is that we are out there talking to elected officials to make sure that public education remains public and it remains for every student in the Commonwealth.
Right. And this whole idea about school choice, folks, these private sector schools, these for-profit schools, these they're not there for your benefit. They're not there for the benefit of your kids. They're there to benefit the people that own them profit-wise. And you know, Kevin, you don't have to – this is me saying this. And the long and short of this is my gut, the public school system is a great equalizer in this country, and it does a great job. And I wish that more parents would get involved. And I wish that more people would let the subject matter experts, that's the teachers, be more involved in the planning of what goes on and how it happens, as opposed to what we've had all too often in the past. But that's just me. So I don't want you to, you know, burn any bridges, Kevin, but, you know, I'm very, very adamant about that. So in any case, Kevin, how do we find out more about the Fairfax Education Association?
Sure. The easiest way is to get in touch with us is to go to the website, fairfaxea.org. And you could also follow us on Facebook at the Fairfax Education Association and on Twitter at FEA_Fairfax.
There you go. And if you include us at The Union Edge, we'll retweet you. How is that?
Oh, I love that. I love the synergy.
All right, brother. We appreciate it. In the meantime, let us know if there's anything we can do to help. I'm Charles Showalter, and you're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.